I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Karen Connolly joins me again. She's just published her latest book, her 10th, The Change Room. It's a novel that sees Eliza Keenan, a mother of two, owner of a successful business, and married. We'll see how happily married, the only respite Eliza has in her life are the regular swims at the local community center pool. In the changing room, Eliza spies a tall, dark young woman who's a source of fascination. I'll get Karen to tell us where the book goes from there, and as much as she wants about the themes she explores. There's sex in the book. There are vivid descriptions of domestic life, too. Karen Connolly has written 9 previous books of fiction, poetry, and nonfiction, including Burmese Lessons, which she was on this program with in 2009. Her last book, The Lizard Cage, was compared to the works of Solzhenitsyn, Mandela, and Orwell in the New York Times Book Review, and she's been nominated for numerous prizes. KarenConnolly.ca is the website for more. This new book is published by Random House Canada. Please welcome back to the Planta Online program from here in Vancouver last week, Karen Connolly. Ms. Connolly, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
When we encounter Eliza in the book for the first time, I guess when we start the book, we encounter her, obviously, from the as we start reading the book. What sort of life has she got? Could you paint the picture of, I mean, I hate that phrase that people use, of having it all, but I mean, she does in a way, doesn't she?
Well, she does. I mean, she's a very privileged person in the sense that she has employment, she's white, she's middle class, she has a loving family, a loving husband, and she has a great job. She's self-employed. She runs a kind of upscale flower boutique. She's really, 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 really busy, because when you're self-employed, and even when you're not self-employed in this world, you tend to be very busy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's probably her main complaint, that her life is like a kind of endless treadmill of tasks, busyness, and not very much time for her, for herself, really, for her own, I don't know, her own development or her own pleasure, in a way. She's just constantly, constantly doing things. So I think that that describes many, many people in, you know, North American and increasingly in European society today.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a line in the book about what the flowers that she sells represents in her life. And I read somewhere, the promise of truth and beauty.
That's right. And flowers are like that. I mean, they are these dazzling natural objects that, you know, through centuries have accrued different meanings and provide a kind of connection to nature through their beauty. And, of course, again, Eliza's in the business of flowers, so the people who can really, really afford flowers are extremely wealthy people in her world. I mean, especially the kind of exotic and beautiful flower arrangements that she and her business partners create.
And, you know, I was just thinking about that, that means a lot, and not just in flowers, but in all our lives, in whatever jobs we do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They sort of represent the ideal of what we think, what we want, or what we think we want, I should say.
Yeah, well, ideally, if that's the kind of employment we have. I mean, work is a real, as you'll notice, you know, you'll notice as you read more of the novel that work is an important theme in the book. She used to be a chef. Mm-hmm. Eliza used to have her own restaurant, and she was a chef. But she realized that the rigors of running her own kitchen, it wasn't going to be possible to maintain or, you know, to meet that rigorous schedule if she wanted to have kids and have her own sort of home kitchen. So she sells a very successful restaurant and goes into this other business. So, you know, the politics of work are an important part of the novel.
Yeah. What's her marriage to Andrew like? He's a professor.
He's a professor of mathematics at an unnamed university, but for anybody who lives in Toronto, it's pretty obviously the University of Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a lovely man, handsome, kind of rumpled, slightly absent-minded professor, but also extremely astute and intelligent and funny. He has a great sense of humor. And they have a very good marriage. I mean, they're very happy together, and they have 2 little boys, 6 and 7. And so their lives are very, very focused on their kids. He's older than Eliza. He's in his mid-50s. Eliza's in her early 40s. And he never expected to have children, so he's quite dazzled by his by his kids, and he kind of finds them, to be honest, he sort of finds them more interesting than he finds Eliza sometimes. So the one complaint Eliza has is her sex life is kind of dull. They just don't have sex as much as they used to, which is a pretty common complaint in many marriages, I believe.
Yeah. So being at the pool, which she's at, what, 2-3 times a week?
Yep.
What does that mean for her?
Well, going to the pool and going swimming, just recently she started doing that again. And so those 2 hours per week are kind of her own time, and she guards that time quite jealously so she can get some exercise and just experience the sensuality of swimming and doing something for herself alone. And she has a lot of memories of Greece, a place she used to visit when she had lived in, actually, when she was young. So the pool kind of brings up a lot of those memories, and it also just reconnects her to her body.
See, I don't swim at all. I've never taken the chance to learn it. And so I'm reading the book, sort of wondering if I'll get what she gets out of it, being in the water. Because, I mean, you spent some time in Europe. It's in Greece, is that right?
Yeah, I have a little house in Greece, so I still go to Greece as often as I can. Yeah. And I'm a big swimmer. I mean, I love swimming. That's one of the reasons why I wrote the novel in some ways, just to celebrate swimming.
But just being in the water, I mean, I mean, I'll go to a pier or something and just look at it, and you know, I think it looks nice, and you know, it's calming in a way. But I never think of going into it.
Yeah, well, you're not a swimmer, Joseph.
No. Should I?
Some people are.
Yeah.
Yeah, some people. I mean, swimming. If you're comfortable swimming, if you become comfortable swimming, it's truly a magical element. You know, you become lighter, your body moves in a different way, you have a sense of just the buoyancy of the body and the strangeness of being in another element. And, you know, water, we're made of water. I mean, we hear that all the time, but
yeah,
it's very true. Like, we're quite connected to water. We begin in water. And so, for me, it's a very powerful element, the element of water.
So when she goes to swim, she spies this other lady who's there.
Mm-hmm.
She first calls her the Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
What does she look like?
Well, she's described in the book as being taller than Eliza. So she is tall. She's a kind of long-boned woman. And she has dark, dark hair, almost black hair, and kind of creamy flesh. So whatever you think of creaminess when you think of flesh, I mean, I didn't want to give her a color.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to be too specific about what she looked like, because everyone will have their own idea of what a tall, beautiful, attractive woman looks like. She's a very powerful-looking woman. And that's one of the things that Eliza is attracted to her. And she's also, frankly, quite sexy. Like, she's just a very sexy woman. So Eliza notices this. She doesn't notice it when they're swimming, but she notices it in the change room when they're taking a shower.
Yeah. And so what feelings are stirred in Eliza by her?
Well, you know, Eliza keeps putting it down to the fact that she's ovulating, but she's definitely attracted to this woman from the moment that she sees her. And in the very first scene when they are in the change room together, there's clearly a kind of electrical charge of attraction between them, which Eliza, you know, worries about so much electricity in a change room, all that water, or a shower room, rather. You know, she's pretty clear about that. She kind of recognizes that about herself and her interaction with the woman. And she also believes that the woman is flirting with her. And in fact, I have a really funny little piece that I'd like to read to you.
Yeah,
which describes that first scene. And nothing happens the first time they meet. It's like meeting anybody. They just say hello, have a little chit-chat, and go their separate ways. You know, nothing, you know, nothing more than that.
Yeah.
So, actually, Eliza says, you know, I'd love to swim more. I'd like to get in shape. And the Amazon, she doesn't know her name yet, the Amazon says, you are in beautiful shape. And Eliza thinks, okay, some people are willing to just, like, flirt like that in a very obvious way. Some people do talk like that. Eliza closed her eyes and put her head back into the spray, but now her neck felt too exposed. She said, thank you, likewise. She knew the Amazon was looking at her, for she had invited the other woman's eyes by closing her own. She felt the live current running through the air between them. That much electricity in a shower room had to be dangerous. Her heart thumped in her throat and her water drum ears. It has come to this, she thought, flirting with a hot young woman at the pool. Andrew and I must have sex. But had Eliza flirted, or had she been flirted with? She was too busy for sexual innuendo, or too tired. She flipped through her mental Rolodex of fellow school mums and dads. In 8 years in the school playground, at the park, dropping off, picking up for play dates, she had not flirted with a single one of them. They were sexless zombies with toddlers and full-time jobs, just like her. She put her hand on the tiled wall beside her to keep her balance. That was the solution she had found to many of the problems of middle-aged, middle-class life. Keep the eyes closed. Maintain balance. She listened to the water splashing for a long, long time.
So as I was telling you before we started, I haven't finished the book, but it's a book that I will finish because, as you've just read, they're beautiful turns of phrases.
Oh, thank you.
Beautiful descriptions in terms of the situation that your characters find themselves in. When you choose a passage like that to read, and I'm assuming you've done this at readings that you've done across the country and when you're traveling to promote the book.
Mm-hmm.
Why that portion of the book? I mean, or that section of the book? Is there something about the words that you chose that I mean, they're quite evocative for the listener and the reader.
Mm-hmm.
For you, who's written them after all these weeks, months?
Well, you know, the book is brand new. So,
yeah.
In fact, as a performer or a reader of my own work, I'm still kind of getting to know the book and experimenting with different passages. But I think that passage kind of captures, you know, just those many, well, in fact, it's not that many, to be honest. I'm kind of like Eliza. It's true. Like, I don't think I've ever flirted with anybody. People in Toronto are not very good at flirting. So I don't think I ever flirted with a single school mom and dad. It's all very dry and controlled and organized and, you know, people are very cordial, but it stops there. And a lot of the sweetness of flirtation with between anybody, between women and women, men and men and women, it doesn't matter, kind of is absent from Canadian Anglophone. Sorry, a truck just went by. A lot of that sweetness of flirtation is quite absent from Canadian Anglophone culture.
Mm.
Particularly when we become older, when we're middle-aged, whereas in Europe, in Mediterranean countries anyway, Spain and Italy and Greece, it's just a kind of way of being with people, is to flirt with them a little bit. But we've become so afraid of what that might mean here. And Toronto has a real Presbyterian hangover, too, so kind of lingers in the air, even though it's very multicultural and a very rich city in many ways. So I wanted to kind of capture that, like the delight and the surprise of what is initially a very innocent flirtation. And in fact, Eliza she's not even sure, right, if it is flirtation or not. And I just wanted to have that moment of intimacy between these two women and what it makes Eliza think, you know, makes her think about her own life a little bit more.
And do you think because she is where she is in her life, whether it's not just the age, but sort of the family life that she has, the career that she has, that she's looking for this sort of closeness, this affection, this, the flirtation?
You know, I don't really think Eliza is expecting it, but she is definitely feeling in the novel, you know, throughout. I mean, even in that first section, right? It's a bit of a theme that she just feels undersexed. She hasn't been having enough sex with her husband. And that doesn't mean she doesn't love him or she's not in love with him or whatever. She's totally committed to him. But there's been a kind of quietness in their sexual life.
Yeah.
And all couples go through, well, I think most couples go through that if they've been together for a long time. So I want to explore what the reality of that is like, at least for women, or at least for Eliza, the character in the novel. And so I don't think she's searching for anything, but something comes across her path. This beautiful, sexy, flirtatious woman appears in her life. And they are genuinely attracted to each other, and it happens very quickly, that attraction. Like, they don't, because of Char's position, she's younger, she doesn't have children, she's queer, she's very, very open to all kinds of different sexual practices and sort of sexual dimensions, because she's been a sex worker, she's still kind of a sex worker. She's kind of transitioning out of sex work as somebody in her mid-30s, but she's been a sex worker for a long time. So she's very open to starting an affair with Eliza, and that's exactly what happens. That's partly what the novel is about. It's an exploration of this extraordinary and joyful, erotic connection between these two women.
Did you enjoy writing the sex scenes in the book?
I had such a good time. I mean, that's actually why I started writing it, is because I've been working on another novel that was, again, like a lot of my work, it was a human rights-based narrative set in Southeast Asia, and it was really a kind of exploration and entrance into, again, what it means to have evil in the world and to have people who are being violated by others because of their vulnerability. And in fact, it focused on children in Southeast Asia who were trafficked for the sex trade.
Mm-hmm.
And my son, who is half Asian, became a kind of weird proxy for these abused children, and it just was sick. And I was very depressed writing it. And I just thought, I don't need to do this anymore. I already know so much about human evil. And there, you know, I mean, as much as we ever know it in a way.
Yeah.
But I've already explored this and grappled with this very, very deeply as a writer. And I was depressed. And so I thought, I have to just write something like I used to write when I was young that would make me happy. And that's what I ended up writing. I just wrote this very steamy, gorgeous, orgasmic sex scene between these two women. And there was a happy ending.
Yeah. Literally.
Needless to say.
Yeah.
And I thought, afterwards, it did make me really happy in more ways than one. And I thought, what if I did this? Like, what if I actually took this seriously as a writer and explored this material and looked at the complications of desire and queerness? I mean, you know, I have had sexual relationships with women before. And so but that's not something, I mean, I have written a little bit about that, but it's never been front and center in my work. So I thought, why not do that? I mean, that's part of life, and we don't celebrate our bodies enough, you know, no matter what our bodies do, they are our bodies. This is the one we get in this life. And so I wanted to just allow there to be just some pleasure and joy in that. So the book is, you know, it's not just about sex. It's got lots of food in it and playing with her kids and conversations. There are a number of dinner parties. Dinner parties are really important in my life, and eating and communicating and connecting with people over food and wine is a big part of, well, it's just a very pleasurable thing to do, and it has been a big part of my life.
Yeah, you learn a lot about people that you're wining and dining with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And there is that dinner party where Eliza is having, you know, eating and drinking with some school moms who help out. They're all school moms in the same school, and they all help out at this big annual fundraiser. and their husbands are there, and they're having this rather lavish dinner party, and something kind of shifts in the air at the dinner party, and they all get kind of a little bit more joyful and a little bit more relaxed than they usually are. And so there is a bit of flirtation and lots of laughter. And I just wanted to have a space for that kind of pleasure in my work as a Canadian writer. Because, of course, so much of my work has been about other places, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to, yeah, I guess I also want to learn how to write about my own territory in a way.
And so what does it do for your own experience, your own life, your day-to-day stuff? I mean, writing a book like The Change Room, does it clarify your own experiences and your own situation, your own deal, say?
I don't know. I think in some ways it's made me a little confused, to be honest. I mean, I'm following Eliza's cue, right? Like, actually, I've been thinking about all of these things and having some amazing conversations with people about the sort of the monogamous boundaries around marriage and the sort of straitjacketed ideas we have about commitment and how if you're committed to one person, you can't have sex with anybody else. And so I've really, you know, my husband and I have been talking about that and kind of questioning it. It is fiction, but it's kind of led me to, you know, to really engage with those themes in my own life. And now turning the book over to the world, it's so interesting to see how many people are actually talking about that or are very happy mm-hmm. to be able to talk about it. Like, I've had amazing conversations at all the public events that I've done. This is a conversation, like how we live now and how we're so busy and how that busyness in our work lives often makes us, you know, forces us actually to neglect the sensual and the erotic. So it's been really fun. And conversations with older people, too. I mean, what does older mean? In this culture, older is like 40 and above. But people in their 60s and their 70s, they've been really, really interested in being part of that conversation, too. So that's been really delightful. That's been lovely.
Does the reaction that you get from readers, does that vary, say, I mean, you've talked about sort of the age groups that you've been talking to and the different reactions you get from with regards to age. But what about places in the country, like Toronto where you live or as opposed to, say, Vancouver here where you're today?
Well, that is a great question because, I mean, oddly, it's hard to measure these things because it's, again, it's new. I'm just sort of like a month and a half into the book's life in the world. But I expected to get a lot more media in Toronto because the book is set in Toronto, obviously. Like, it's definitely Toronto. But I haven't had any media yet in Toronto at all. One interview, that's it. And we've pitched it in all sorts of different ways and to different people, into magazines and newspapers, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the subject matter is still really challenging to people. Whereas I did have some good media in Winnipeg. I had a profile and a review of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bestseller for a few weeks, you know, at the major bookstore there, the McNally Robinson's bookstore, big, big bookstore in Winnipeg. So that was really fun. And the reading was really fun there, too. And I was recently on Salt Spring Island.
Yeah.
And I had a really great time. People were just very open and very generous and asked good questions and made really salient observations about the subject matter of the book. And Victoria was the same.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, I have an event tonight at Banyan Books, and, you know, I'm just seeing what's going to happen next. And I believe that I'm going to be at the Vancouver Writers Festival, too, so I'm really looking forward to that as well.
Yes, that's the thing, because I've never been to Toronto. And mm-hmm. so when I started reading the book, you know, I got the sense that, oh, this is Toronto.
Right.
And all the sort of, not negative, but sort of the feelings of loneliness that I've always thought Toronto to be.
Uh-huh.
And but then again, you know, I think if you live in Vancouver long enough, you can sort of feel those things in certain parts of this town as well. I think it's any big city, for that matter.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised when you say that Toronto hasn't, I guess, does it, Is it too close to home for the, for some people there, do you think?
Well, I, you know, as I've already said, I had such a great time writing the book that I don't think I understood. I think I was frankly naive, or accepting that, like allowing myself to be naive about how challenging it is still to, it is still challenging for people to engage. Well, I don't know. I keep second guessing myself because, as I've said, a lot of the audiences have been amazing and open and very interested in talking about the themes in the book, around sexuality, monogamy, the busyness of our lives. But the media carries so much fear about sexuality, particularly honest depictions of sexuality regarding women and women's bodies. So it's not 50 Shades of Grey, and it's not just a bodice ripper, mm-hmm. and it's not just sex disconnected from real, quote-unquote, obviously it's a book, from real life. I mean, Eliza and Andrew, her husband, and Char, the lover, they all lead real lives in the world, and that those real lives are depicted in the book. So Eliza's a mother, she's a busy businesswoman, Andrew's her husband, they take care of their children. You know, there's a lot of house cleaning in this novel. She's a bit obsessive about house cleaning. It's a kind of way she controls her reality. They have real lives. Like, their lives are what they are, but sexuality and problems with sexuality are integrated into those real lives in the course of the book. In fact, they're kind of the subject of the course of the book. So I don't think the media, they're like, oh my God, what the hell is this? Like, what kind of questions do we ask about this book? Is this too frightening? Like, I think they're afraid, actually.
They're afraid of their own reality, say, their own real lives, perhaps.
Well, or just what it means. What does it mean when we're honest about sex? We all carry sexual wounds and sexual pain, in a way. You know, we all have sexual disappointments. And even in marriages and long partnerships, people can be very lonely. And Eliza is kind of grappling with some of those things. And I guess we don't, I don't know. People don't talk about that stuff. We don't talk about that stuff enough, honestly.
Yeah.
Nor do I. Like, that's why I read the book, because I'm having a chance to work out my stuff, right? Like, I'm thinking about my own life and the lives of other women and men that I know by writing. And I think the media carries the fear, but people have responded with great openness. So that's been encouraging.
Yeah. There's a marvelous line in the book, the way to ruin a good marriage is to keep score of who did what, and that's stuck with me over the last few days since I've read it.
Yeah.
Because that applies to not only marriage. I'm not married, so it's but I'm taking it for what it means in terms of friendship, even.
Oh, that is so wise, Joseph. It's not just marriage. It's friendship too. It's all sort of human. It's all human connection, right? And we all keep score. It's a terrible habit, especially in marriage.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had to deal with that a lot. And I'm a very, I'm a very demanding person, I think. So I've kept score a lot, and I've learned that that's just not the way to go. But it's very hard to resist that, you know. What am I getting back? What am I getting out of this? I mean, it's selfish, right? It's the ego.
Yeah.
It's the ego measuring and finding people falling short. And you know, that's just part of human existence. Like, how do we deal with that? How do we become more generous? And that's a big question that I can't answer. It's an ongoing process,
and it's one that we grapple with for the rest of our lives, isn't it?
It is. It's a difficult one to not keep score, and also to not cling. I mean, it's about change, obviously. The novel's called The Change Room. To not cling desperately to the way that things are or the way that we think they need to be, that they must be. And this goes back to a kind of Buddhist meditative practice that I've had since I was very young, though the book is not, it doesn't involve that. I didn't feel that I needed to bring that into it. But the question of changing reality is at the heart of Buddhist practice and Buddhist cosmology. Mm-hmm. So it certainly is something that, you know, that influences, that has influenced me as a writer, and it's a kind of underground influence in this novel as well.
It's a good novel from what I've read so far. It's as I said, it's one that I want to finish.
Oh, good. Well, and that makes me happy. Thank you.
And as usual, I've enjoyed our chat. It's been, I guess, 8 years since we talked last.
Has it been that long, really? Oh my goodness, that's too long. Okay, yeah. I'm gonna start working on the next one.
Well, you know, maybe when I finish the book, I'll have more questions, right?
Absolutely.
I probably will, right?
I'd love to talk to you again.
Yeah, well, good luck with this book, and it's nice talking again, and all the best with it.
Okay, thank you so much, and thank you very, very much for the interview. As I said, it's been a bit of a challenge to get media for this novel for the reasons we've gone through, so it was a pleasure talking to you, too, as always.
The book is called The Change Room. It's published by Random House. Its author, Karen Connolly, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.